Welcome to Audio Notes. I'm David Finkel, Artistic Director of Music at Menlo, and it is my great pleasure to welcome you to the festival's 2013 season, From Bach. This season, Music at Menlo celebrates Johann Sebastian Bach, the composer universally recognized as the greatest in Western music history. To the ears of many modern listeners, the canon begins with Bach, and in the 2.5 centuries since Bach's death, arguably every major musical innovation has borne his influence. Bach's legacy endures, whether in the craftsmanship of composers from Haydn to Mozart to Mendelssohn, in the sonic magnitude of Brahms, Bartok, and Shostakovich, and even in the sensual allure of Debussy, Richard Strauss, and George Gershwin. Audio Notes are designed to enhance your enjoyment and deepen your appreciation of the music you'll be hearing at the festival. I'll be joined by Artistic Co-Director Wu Han, Music at Menlo's Artistic Administrator Patrick Castillo, and some of this season's festival artists to offer historical and cultural context and a variety of perspectives on this summer's concert programs. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you at the concerts.
Bach elevated the simple construct of prelude and fugue to profound heights. More than merely an academic two-part structure, the prelude and fugue in Bach's hands spoke to something deeply human. The prelude, an invitation into Bach's fantastical imagination, the fugue, an extension of the prelude's expression into the wondrous complexity of Bach's contrapuntal world. Concert Program 4 begins with a selection of Bach's preludes and fugues and follows their influence through music history. That Bach's preludes and fugues captivated Haydn and Mozart is evident in various of their works for string quartet. 2 centuries later, Britten and Shostakovich too would call on the same Bachian tradition to give voice to a wholly distinct worldview. The program begins with 3 preludes and fugues from Book 1 of The Well-Tempered Clavier, Bach's seminal volume of preludes and fugues for solo keyboard.
Bach composed the first volume of The Well-Tempered Clavier in 1722. The set of 24 preludes and fugues, set in all 24 major and minor keys, was designed, according to Bach, quote, "for the profit and use of musical youth desirous of learning, and especially for the pastime of those already skilled in this study." End quote. By utilizing all of the major and minor keys, The Well-Tempered Clavier also set out to demonstrate how modern systems of tuning, or temperament, allowed keyboard music to be played in any key, whereas previous systems might sound pleasing in one key, but out of tune in another. Some 2 decades later, Bach would compose another set of 24 preludes and fugues, commonly referred to as The Well-Tempered Clavier, Book 2. The 2 volumes together represent one of the most enduring and influential works, not only of the keyboard literature, but indeed of Western music at large. In the nearly 3 centuries since its composition, The Well-Tempered Clavier endures as a paragon of contrapuntal composition and continues to serve as an essential resource in keyboard pedagogy. The Well-Tempered Clavier established the pairing of prelude and fugue as a signature Bachian format. The preludes are fanciful and formally free. The fugues then draw the expressive character of their corresponding preludes into their labyrinthine sophistication. And here, a quick layman's definition of fugue is in order. A simple way to think of a fugue is as similar to a round or canon, like row, row, row your boat, but subjected to the most sophisticated compositional techniques. Like a simple round, a fugue is based on a short melody called the subject. But when the second voice comes in with the subject, it presents it on different pitches. And in the meantime, the first voice continues, unfurling its own melodic figurations alongside the second voice. and as the third voice, fourth voice, however many parts the composer can manage. As each subsequent voice enters, the counterpoint, the system of rules governing how multiple voices interact, becomes increasingly complicated. And as the fugue unfolds, the subject might be presented in augmentation or diminution, that is, twice as slow or twice as fast, or multiple entrances of the subject might overlap, a technique called stretto. The opportunities for invention are limited only by the composer's technique and imagination, which in Bach's case were beyond comprehension. So the splendor of Bach's preludes and fugues lies largely in, first, the creation of a captivating musical world in the prelude, and then the further blossoming of that world within the rigorous contrapuntal design of the fugue that follows. The program continues with Mozart's homage to Bach's preludes and fugues, the Adagio and Fugue in C minor for string quartet. Mozart's Adagio and Fugue began life as the Fugue in C minor, K426, for two keyboards. Composed in 1783, that work, to which Mozart would add the Adagio introduction when preparing the string quartet arrangement, appeared as part of a flurry of new pieces the composer produced upon his arrival in Vienna in 1781. Indeed, Mozart's productivity during these years seems to have known no limits. Between 1781 and 1786, his output included numerous piano concerti and symphonies, important chamber works, including violin sonatas, the quintet for piano and winds, and the six quartets known as the Haydn quartets after their dedicatee, the Mass in C minor, the operas, the Abduction from the Seraglio and the Marriage of Figaro, and many other works. But the string quartet version of the Adagio and Fugue came about under quite different circumstances. By the late 1780s, Mozart's popularity, and consequently his income, had taken a downward turn. Although Figaro had been met with wild acclaim in Prague, the opera's Viennese premiere in 1786 was not well received, and his production did not prove lucrative for Mozart. In order to generate much-needed income in the summer of 1788, Mozart composed at a furious pace, completing a symphony, a violin sonata, a piano trio, a piano sonata, and the quartet arrangement of the piano duo Adagio and Fugue in the span of only a few weeks. The character of the Adagio and Fugue is severe and serious throughout. The Adagio serves as a prelude, simultaneously paying homage to Bach, while also establishing Mozart's own voice, expressing a more modern musical point of view.
The Adagio especially, it's very Baroque-like for Mozart.
Danish quartet violinist Rune Tonsgaard Sørensen.
It's almost like listening to Handel or playing Handel or Corelli or something like this. The fugue though is, you can hear that it's really not Bach. It has a totally another feel and sound to it. It's hard to figure out because the theme is so twisted somehow.
The theme ends with a chromatic line, which is... It's always hard to know what to do with this part of it. Like, just to play the theme is actually tricky.
Danish quartet violist Asbjørn Norgaard.
When we worked on it, we always, like, end up trying 50 different ways of playing the theme, and it never really feels comfortable somehow, because then when the next guy's playing it, the same way doesn't fit anymore somehow.
Indeed, Mozart's fugue is intensely chromatic, creating a sense of struggle that foreshadows the Sturm und Drang aesthetic of the Romantic period. At the same time, His study of Bach's fugal technique is clear as well, as, for instance, when he inverts the subject, or turns it upside down, and continues with the fugue based on that variant of the melody. The fugue's most fervent moment comes with the stretto near the end, the fugal technique of overlapping entrances of the subject. As if eager to show off what he's learned from his study of Bach, Mozart applies this technique both to the subject and its inversion. The set of six string quartets published as Joseph Haydn's Opus 20 represents an important milestone in the creative evolution of the composer recognized as the father of the string quartet. In their thematic ideas, ensemble writing, and overall strength of character, they demonstrate a level of sophistication that laid the groundwork not only for Haydn's later quartets, but likewise for those of Mozart, Beethoven, and the generations of composers who followed. The Opus 20 quartets, published in 1772, reflect the influence of the Sturm und Drang movement emergent at that time, and which would become a defining aesthetic of Romanticism. This movement, led by such figures as the great poet Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, favored deep and subjective expressive power over the well-mannered Rococo style gallant that characterized music of the early classical period. With his Opus 20 quartets, Haydn showed a greater interest in composing in what became known as the learned style, serious and intellectually stimulating music, characterized by a sophisticated technique and part writing that asserted the individuality of all four voices, rather than the gallant style, which was less serious entertainment music, generally featuring a light, attractive melody above simple harmonies and homophonic textures. The fifth quartet of the Opus 20 set, the quartet in F minor, departs immediately from the gallant style in its opening measures. The first theme, intoned by the violin, is stern and introspective. As you can hear, as the work begins, the second violin, viola, and cello play the role of supporting cast, while the first violin offers the theme. But just a moment later, the music warms from F minor to A flat major, and while the first violin shows a sunnier side of the theme, the accompaniment in the lower strings becomes more involved. It's as if we can hear each instrument breaking free of the old style and establishing its identity within the ensemble. Now firmly in the major key, Haydn integrates all four instruments to introduce the second theme. The close of the exposition further reinforces the independence of each voice. The textural interest of the music only grows richer as the movement progresses into the development section. And even when we arrive at the recapitulation, which typically would begin with a near verbatim recount of the exposition, Haydn enhances the main theme with new dialogue between the first and second violin. As further evidence of the emergence of the Sturm und Drang aesthetic, the second movement minuet bears little of the aristocratic grace typically associated with that dance form. Instead, the severity of the first movement's main theme is carried over and prevails over the minuet's elegant triple meter. The contrasting trio section offers the listener some respite from the gravity of the minuet, spinning a new tune in F major. The second movement ends with a return to the F minor minuet, but the slow movement that follows revisits the key of F major with a gently rocking lullaby. The final movement offers the quartet's strongest example of the learned style, and of Haydn's advanced writing for quartet, with the independence of voices and all that. And ironically, how it demonstrates the forward progress of Haydn's compositional language is by looking back to a musical form most closely associated with Bach. The finale is a fugue on two distinct subjects, the first presented initially by the second violin, a disjunct melody of half notes and whole notes. Against it, the second subject, a more lithe melody, played first by the viola. But very quickly, all four instruments get involved, and off they go. The fugue is short, this finale is the quartet's shortest movement, but it's pithy, tautly constructed, and in its mastery of a hallowed Bachian technique, points the way forward for an immensely rich quartet literature to come over subsequent generations.
The program continues with Felix Mendelssohn's Capriccio in E minor, Opus 81, number 3.
Mendelssohn's Opus 81 comprises four short works for string quartet, composed at different times of his life, but assembled and published posthumously. They were assigned the opus number 81 to follow Mendelssohn's last string quartet, the F minor, Opus 80. The third work of the Opus 81 set, the Capriccio in E minor, betrays the deep influence of Bach on Mendelssohn's compositional style throughout his life. And from an historical perspective, the connection between Bach and Mendelssohn is moreover significant. In the decades following Bach's death in 1750, his music fell, if not quite into obscurity, into some measure of neglect. But in 1824, the 15-year-old Mendelssohn received from his grandmother what would be a gift of great historic consequence, a copy of the score to the St. Matthew Passion. 5 years later, Mendelssohn's obsession with Bach and his particular affinity with this work culminated in a celebrated performance of the Passion at the Berlin Singakademie. That performance, led by the brilliant 20-year-old conductor Felix Mendelssohn, revitalized interest in Bach's music throughout Western Europe, thus crediting Mendelssohn as the author of the modern Bach revival. The Capriccio, composed in 1843, follows the model of Bach's preludes and fugues. It comprises two distinct sections. First, a doleful andante con moto. This music, comprising just 28 bars, serves as a short prelude to the main body of the Capriccio. It arrives at a brief cadenza-like passage in the first violin, and with that phrase hanging in the air like an open question, the impassioned Allegro Fugato begins.
The quartets by Haydn and Mendelssohn, the program returns to the keyboard literature with Dmitri Shostakovich's Prelude and Fugue in E minor and three preludes by Claude Debussy.
In 1950, Shostakovich visited Leipzig, the city where Bach lived and worked for the last three decades of his life. Attending a Bach competition, Shostakovich heard the Russian pianist Tatiana Nikolaeva perform Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier. Inspired by what he heard, he set out soon thereafter to compose his own series of 24 preludes and fugues for piano in each of the major and minor keys. He completed the set, published as his Opus 87, between October 1950 and February 1951. The Opus 87 Preludes and Fugues invite obvious comparison to Bach. But despite the homage to the Baroque master, Shostakovich's Preludes and Fugues strongly demonstrate his own modern voice. Like Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier, they exemplify impeccable counterpoint and fugal technique and demonstrate a deep understanding of writing for the piano. But in their expressive character, the Opus 87 Preludes and Fugues are unmistakably Shostakovich. Claude Debussy was the leading proponent of an early 20th century musical aesthetic that's become known as Impressionism, a term borrowed from the visual arts, and specifically the work of the painter Claude Monet. As a musical term, Impressionism refers to the rich palette of harmonic colors and instrumental timbres that characterize Debussy's music, and which we now think of as a characteristically French sound. Impressionist music often approaches harmony and texture in ways contrary to the dictates of the classical tradition. Debussy once said, quote, "Generally speaking, I feel more and more that music, by its very essence, is not something that can flow inside a rigorous traditional form. It consists of colors and of rhythmicized time." End quote. Debussy published his first book of preludes for solo piano in 1910. The volume comprises 12 short but compelling works, demonstrating in miniature the rich nuance of Debussy's musical imagination, and specifically his command of harmonic color in writing for the piano. Concert Program 3 offers a set of three of Debussy's preludes, beginning with The Girl with the Flaxen Hair. The set concludes with one of Debussy's most breathtaking creations, The Sunken Cathedral. The title alludes to an ancient Breton myth about a cathedral submerged underwater off the coast of the island of Ys, which emerges on clear mornings, transmitting the sound of bells, organs, and chant across the sea. Debussy uses modal and parallel harmonies to evoke antiquity, while the music's slow-moving rhythm creates a feeling of hushed awe. Concert Program 3 juxtaposes Debussy's preludes with another set of three by one of Debussy's most famous contemporaries, George Gershwin. The Brooklyn-born pianist and composer George Gershwin hardly needs any introduction. By the time he reached his 30th birthday in 1928, he was the most famous composer in America, both in popular and concert music. And more than 70 years after his death, he remains a vital part of America's musical profile. Gershwin composed some of the most iconic tunes ever written, standards like Summertime and Someone to Watch Over Me, which, beyond the scope of the musical world, have become hallmarks of American culture. Among Gershwin's instrumental concert music are a delectable set of three preludes for solo piano, composed between 1923 and 1926. Gershwin assigned the first and third of the set the same tempo marking, fast, rhythmically, and decisively. These bookend a slow, languid blues in C-sharp minor. Many regard these preludes as the finest of Gershwin's quote-unquote classical compositions. Indeed, they captivated no less an authority than the great violinist Jascha Heifetz, who transcribed them for violin and piano, the version that we'll hear this summer at the festival.
The program concludes with Benjamin Britten's Prelude and Fugue for 18 strings, Opus 29, composed in 1943.
The 2013 season marks Benjamin Britten's centenary. He lived from 1913 to 1976 and was, during his lifetime and remains today, a cherished English cultural icon. Britten cultivated a uniquely personal and deeply expressive compositional language, while still adhering to certain musical principles of the past, notably the music of the Baroque composer Henry Purcell. Britten sought to capture what he identified in Purcell's music as a synthesis of, quote, clarity, brilliance, tenderness, and strangeness, end quote. The Prelude and Fugue for 18 strings, like any work from any period classified as a prelude and fugue, inevitably calls to mind the precedent established by Bach. But like the Opus 87 preludes and fugues of Britten's contemporary, Dmitri Shostakovich, Britten's prelude and fugue superimposes onto that Baroque tradition his own uniquely modern perspective. The ensemble comprises 18 distinct string parts, 10 violins, 3 violas, 3 cellos, and 2 double basses. The prelude begins with an impassioned exchange of loud pizzicato and declamatory chords, anchored by octaves in the double basses. Two distinct melodies emerge, one presented in quiet solidarity by 17 of the players, serving as a backdrop to the other, a plaintive violin solo. The launch of the fugue, marked Allegro Energico, brings an abrupt change in character. The sprightly fugue subject is presented in succession by each of the 18 instruments, beginning with the second bass, then the first, followed by the third, second, and first cellos. Then the 3 violas, one after the other. Then the second violins, then the first, steadily building a massive orchestral sonority. Britten's management of 18 individual voices is particularly impressive near the end of the fugue. Britten writes a stretto, staggering overlapping entrances of the subject, again in each voice from the second bass up to the first violin, as he builds towards the music's intoxicating climax. A coda to the fugue turns dour. The plaintive violin solo from the prelude returns. Leading to a reprise of the prelude's opening chords. But the ebullience of the fugue has the last word. Audio Notes are authored and produced by Patrick Castillo and narrated by David Finkel, Patrick Castillo, and Wu Han. Additional narration is provided by Andrew Goldstein. Additional mastering is provided by Dahong Situ. Musical excerpts appear courtesy of the following artists and organizations. J.S. Bach's Third Brandenburg Concerto is performed by Amy Lee, Joseph Silverstein, Jennifer Frauci, Mark Holloway, Paul Neubauer, Daniel Phillips, Fred Sherry, Nicholas Kanalakis, F.A. Baltasiegel, Kurt Marogi, and Anthony Newman, and appears courtesy of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center. Richard Strauss's Sextet, performed by the Vienna Philharmonic, conducted by Andrei Previn, Dmitri Shostakovich's Third String Quartet, Haydn's String Quartet, Opus 20, No. 5, and Mendelssohn's Capriccio, Opus 81, No. 3, performed by the Emerson Quartet, appear courtesy of Deutsche Grammophon. Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart's Divertimento, performed by the Leopold String Trio, Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier, performed by Angela Hewitt, Shostakovich's Prelude and Fugue in E minor, performed by Tatiana Nikolaeva, Claude Debussy's Preludes, performed by Stephen Osborne, and George Gershwin's Preludes, performed by Angela Brownridge, appear courtesy of Hyperion Records. Mozart's Adagio and Fugue, performed by the Orion Quartet, appears courtesy of Music at Menlo Live. Benjamin Britten's Prelude and Fugue for 18 Strings, performed by the English Chamber Orchestra and conducted by the composer, appears courtesy of Decca Records. Audio Notes is a copyrighted production of Artist Led.